Welcome to TFR Let's Talk. I'm your host, Swapnil Bharti, and my next guest is once again Tim Wagner, CEO and co-founder of India. Tim, it's great to have you back on the show.
Pleasure to be here again. Thank you for the invite.
Multi-cloud is kind of a magic word, right? If you talk to companies, every company says, they also tell you that, hey, we have a very good multi-cloud, hybrid cloud strategy. But what is the reality? How much of it is actually accidental versus how much of that is strategically planned? So I want to hear your thoughts on what do you think, what is the reality that how many times companies actually plan it versus it becomes accidental because someone from their organization is trying some cloud and suddenly they end up with multi-cloud?
Yeah, it's exactly how it happens, right? I mean, look, the good news here is obviously we live in this incredibly exciting and interesting time. These, you know, public clouds let us kind of reimagine and operate on data, you know, far more efficiently and cost effectively than we ever could before. Complex infrastructure is starting to give way to these higher levels of abstraction. And, you know, and hopefully, we'll talk about this a little bit, you know, some of these kind of walled gardens of the past are, you know, are starting to come down, which is really nice. But the reality on the ground today, you know, is that from a CIO's perspective, using more than one cloud probably inspires at least as much fear as it does excitement, right? There's this super grand hope we've all got. Like, we want to avoid this next generation of what I like to call Larry's lock-in. And we want to avoid it from anyone, including cloud service providers. But, you know, the other side of that coin is when you think about where costs are being driven from today, you know, the not so secret, dirty little secret here, right, is that they are increasingly cloud spend costs. And so multi-cloud has this sort of dark fear associated with it, that those costs are going to start to balloon even bigger, especially if that's not controlled. And that's where I think this phrase accidental multi-cloud, you know, really provokes a CIO's worst nightmare, you know, through whether it's, you know, what we used to call this shadow IT decision-making, just organic, you know, M&A activities that bring other clouds and other applications into the fold, or even maybe it's, you know, it's a legitimate attempt to kind of limit a vendor's control, but they all kind of give rise to this unbridled mess, right? If we're not careful about it. And, you know, the accidental multi-cloud can be either this struggle with sort of the inevitable bottom-up adoption, or, you know, maybe it's that you do have an adoption strategy in place, but it just, you know, it just hasn't actually been applied effectively or consistently. You know, one group ended up going with, you know, Google for its ease of use and scalability on data. Somebody else signed a contract with Azure because they love the IoT and they had a need for Windows servers. And now all of a sudden you've got a company that's, you know, it's multi-cloud in name, but it's certainly not multi-cloud in a good way.
Yeah, and you touched upon a few things, and that's the reality. Sometimes just accidental things also happen, but sometimes companies do make conscious decisions to leverage offerings of one provider, and that's why they also move to hybrid cloud. A lot of things run on-prem also. So what I also want to understand from you is that how many companies do realize that their cloud multi-cloud story is accidental versus planned?
I would say most companies out there, you know, if you get a CIO in a particularly honest mood, what you're going to hear from most of them is that nobody is fully satisfied with their multi-cloud strategy today. If they're doing some of that intentionally, they probably don't feel that they have pushed far enough or fast enough into all the things they might want to get out of it. And that's probably the good case in some sense, right? I would say, you know, more commonly, probably in the, you know, the other 95% of the companies are staring at a situation where, you know, what they've got there is not a situation of their own choosing, right? And, you know, and I've been in this circumstance, right? You know, even having been an IT leader in the past through acquisition of companies, through just some of the organic decision making, I ended up on, you know, the three different clouds, right? We had AWS, Azure, and Google applications running in there, and found ourselves with some degree of redundancy, plus just the complexity of managing all of that. And, you know, one of the ways that I think people have tried to get around this is with this use of containers as a kind of portability or cross-cloud solution. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, anytime there's been sort of a challenging walled garden, you know, we've always created these portability layers. You know, back in the day, that was things like the Cambrian explosion on Unix-flavored operating systems. You know, today, that looks like, in part, you know, public cloud providers. And they're going to be, you know, really, really large companies who have effective ways of dealing with that. You know, they might be able to, let's say you're Netflix, for example. It's absolutely going to be cost effective and meaningful to, for you to think about a cross-cloud redundancy strategy, right? That's what multi-cloud is going to mean to a company like that, in addition to getting negotiating power. But that's probably the top 1 or 2%. You know, most companies aren't going to have the staffing, the wherewithal, and you know, and certainly the budgets to go after building out redundancy, you know, on top of and alongside all of their major cloud vendors. It's just it's a very challenging proposition, even with technologies like like containers lying around.
And when you talk about Kubernetes and containers, and we call it like kind of cross cloud solutions, I was talking to another company, SUSE, and they say, hey, you know, when you talk about Kubernetes, it's not multi-cloud, right? You are using the same API. It doesn't matter. You are just using cloud from different vendor, but it's not truly multi-cloud or hybrid cloud. It's when your architecture is totally different, and you know better than anyone else, you know, because now we are also looking at ARM. We are also looking at Edge. So that is where things get really complicated. So if we just focus on, let's not talk about all that architectural complexity, but if you just focus on Kubernetes, containers, you know, when you, as you mentioned, you know, cross cloud, how does that affect the multi-cloud story? What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, I think the value of those technologies is when people have this compelling need to create an application that can run in multiple places. And there are a few really good use cases for that, right? Cross-cloud redundancy is certainly one of those use cases. The ability to be, you know, to be able to port an application or run or maintain an application on, you know, on different clouds because you know you have a migration coming up. Maybe even something like you've acquired a company on, and they were on Azure, you need to get them to AWS or vice versa. So there's some really great uses for that, but it probably isn't going to be a common solution or path by which all enterprises, and certainly smaller companies than that, are able to get to a complete multi-cloud strategy. And you can, even though you can easily see why. I mean, imagine you're an IT director. You go to your CIO and you say to her, you know, I've got this idea. I'm going to make us cloud agnostic, but the cost of that is going to be that every application we write has to be built and tested and deployed and managed and monitored on three different clouds, taking 3x the staff, you know, at 3x the infrastructure cost. That's not going to be a pleasant conversation. And as a result, I think for most companies, because these, you know, containers don't come attached to a bucket of free money, they're going to be looking for some kind of platform-level solution, some other way, whether that's, you know, through Snowflake, through some other vendor, which has already figured out multi-cloud to help them with this complicated problem.
I will talk about solutions in a bit, but I want to just emphasize or just talk a little bit more about the problem. It's also that even if, you know, as you were saying earlier, even if you take your port or your application and sprinkle it across all three clouds, so you'll say, hey, you know what, you don't have to worry about vendor lock-in and all those things. But as you rightly mentioned, the cost of, you know, working with all those providers, and also as easy as it is to put it on your credit cards, but those bills pile up too.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is one of these sort of rock and a hard place that a lot of companies find themselves in, right? They don't want to have to port every application to every cloud vendor because that doesn't feel like a winning strategy. But they also don't like this vendor lock-in of having to build everything on a single cloud and kind of feeling like, you know, it's the cable and phone bundle problem, right? Where you're sort of stuck with everything. And that's there's this term now that's gaining some currency that I actually kind of like, polycloud. And I think of it almost in some ways as the opposite meaning of accidental multi-cloud, right? It's when people intentionally take advantage and they're thoughtful about their cloud strategy, and in particular about their choice of services and selection within it. So maybe you like the ML capabilities on Google, but you like the storage services on AWS, and then you'd like IoT on Azure. And so you're actually able to go out there and pick. And it'd be really nice to be able to, you know, to have that choice as opposed to feeling like you were kind of, those things were bundled together for you. And there are probably two different trends here that I say they're related, but they're super important to think about. You know, one of them is, you know, imagine where are the cloud vendors today? And if you ask ourselves, like, where are they spending their money? And in this case, I mean sort of their people, to drive better innovation, right? So, like, let's make no mistake, right? Obviously, you know, Azure and AWS and Google, like, they're still renting a lot of servers and a lot of disk drives. But they're putting their best and their brightest minds on those services that they think are the most innovative, the more abstract services, the ones that they think offer the highest productivity gains. So if you're a CIO and you want to go buy innovation from AWS, you're increasingly going to have to let yourself use those specialized services. And that's the, you know, that's the way that you're going to get the greater productivity benefits. But it's also, you know, increasingly because where the margins sit, what those vendors are going to be using. Things like SageMaker from AWS, for example. And then the kind of the second part of that is, you know, when you think about these lower level services that are turning into commodities, these higher level and more abstract services, they're doing the exact opposite. They're becoming more specialized, more differentiated. You know, Google's trying hard to make its AI ML offerings very different from what AWS is offering, for example. And evolutionary explosion, if you want to think about it that way, is going to also require a little bit of Darwinian responses from CIOs. They're going to have to be willing to winnow down to the services they think are actually helpful for them, right? So that requires choice, but it also requires the ability to go pick and choose. And that freedom to pick the best cloud services that work for your company, your department, your application, regardless of which cloud vendor made them, I think that's sort of the essence of this polycloud idea.
Can you just go a bit deeper into how would you differentiate polycloud from multi-cloud?
One of the things that I think when we talk about multi-cloud, right, that's kind of a universal term. And I think to your typical CIO, that can be as simple as, you know, at the end of the month, I'm getting a bill from AWS and I'm also getting a bill from Azure and I'm also getting a bill from Google. You know, I've been in that seat before. I know what that looks like. And for lots of companies, right, that, as we said, like, that is going to be a bit of an organic process, right? Like, it's some of that is going to happen. Maybe you acquired a company and now it's just a fact of life that you're going to live with that bit of complexity. What it doesn't necessarily imply is that there was a strategy behind how you got to that particular cumulative bill. And I think when we talk about polycloud, the idea is to kind of move that emphasis more from what happened into what do you want or what are you trying to achieve, right? Thinking about it from that CIO or CTO perspective of, are you trying to achieve cross-cloud redundancy? Are you trying to create more negotiating power through the strength of flexibility to move from one cloud to another? Or are you trying to be able to pick the best and brightest, to sort of make that best of breed decision without feeling like you've been kind of stuck inside a walled garden? And now you've got that, you've created for yourself that ability to choose, to kind of pick amongst all of the services that are out there and use whatever it is that's going to make you the most productive and the most successful. And you see, you know, in a kind of a multi-cloud strategy trending sort of toward just agnosticism of compute and downward, you hear a lot of emphasis and discussion around containers and portability and sort of least common denominator, because in some sense you want to be able to run things or move things from point A to point B, from cloud A to cloud B as easily as possible. And I think when you think about polycloud, you're not trying to get off of a cloud. You're not even necessarily trying to make yourself indifferent to the cloud. You're trying to pick the best services that are out there, because you're thinking about it not as a commodity play, but actually as a productivity and a leverage play. And for me, that sort of process and human kind of piece of it in the terms of the decision making is probably even more important than the specifics of individual technologies that might sit behind it.
As you're saying, a lot of things, low-level things, are getting commoditized. A lot of things are getting democratized, but a lot of things at the higher level that are getting tied to those cloud vendors. Is there any future that you see where just the way this is, as I said, you know, it's a totally, you know, that just the way, it doesn't really matter whether you are a T-Mobile user or a Verizon user or AT&T user, you can make calls across. So same with the cloud also, that that would be, I think, the ideal world, but you can tap into whichever service you want. without having to put your eggs in everybody's basket. Because if we do look at cloud, applications can come and go. What we really care about data. But these clouds, data has its own gravity, and that's what creates the risk of vendor lock-in, because more and more cloud providers, they do know this reality too, as much as we do though. So that word does create that, hey, you know what, your data will not get locked in, because then you can leverage all the cloud. So if I ask you that, what would be, you touched upon that, but a CIO Nirvana look like, what would be that?
Yeah, you know, you really hit the nail on the head here, right? This challenge of trying to get to use the best and the brightest services across different clouds, like it is ultimately a data sharing problem, because it's got that fundamental requirement. You know, you're not going to be able to drive a service, whether it's an ML training set or a mission critical application that needs to read out of a database or write into a queue. Like, there's no way to do that if your data isn't accessible to you. And, you know, usually that's both production and consumption of data. And you need to be able to do that across regions, across accounts, across cloud vendors, certainly, and maybe depending on the application, you know, even across different companies, you know, in something like a supply chain where the problem or the workflow is kind of inherently multi-party. And that is really where companies are going to struggle. They're going to struggle from a process, they're going to struggle technologically, and they're going to struggle with costs. The technological one is easy to understand, right? Just, you know, most companies out there, if you're an enterprise, your business probably is not building real-time, low-latency, cross-cloud data fabrics from scratch, right? It's a hard problem. ACID semantics, security, PII handling and management, low-latency distributed systems, you know, it's a difficult problem. There's a reason that things like that have generally moved to cloud providers. But those cloud providers, you know, they're not necessarily gonna make this easy either, right? Because they want you to stay. They know that cost, the complexity, the security concerns about moving data are gonna be really effective moats around all of their individual castles. It's kind of the business model. So what a company's gonna need to solve this without hassle is a data sharing platform, you know, some kind of fully managed solution that can make a single source of truth that's cloud spanning in its nature, and that kind of takes away some of those hard challenges of doing low data, highly secure data management with all the privacy and governance controls, you know, so that data stays protected. And, you know, the added wrinkle there, of course, is not everybody is 100% in the cloud today. In fact, almost 100% of people are not 100% in the cloud today, which means that there's also this other straddle to worry about, which is some of that data is still on-prem, and that creates all those additional networking and access control considerations. It's not just spanning clouds, it's also getting to the on-prem data that you might not have migrated into the cloud in the first place yet.
And if you look at all the challenges that you mentioned, of course, that's one of the reasons you also created Vendia. So let's talk about, it's a big problem, so it's not that easy to be solved immediately. So but let's look at what Vendia is doing to kind of address some of these challenges.
Maybe we could start by just even painting sort of what we think of as the kind of the future state of the cloud, right? You know, this version of the cloud where all your data is always where you need it to be. It's always consistent. It's always up to date. It's when appropriate, it's shared with the right set of partners. It's crossing those things we said, you know, the accounts, regions, clouds, technology stacks, et cetera. Then you really could like live this, what I call the polycloud dream, right? you could pick the best and brightest from the different cloud vendors and use those to build your applications. And you wouldn't have to worry about where that data was being produced or consumed. And that's kind of the key piece that Vendia is, you know, trying to create here, right? Is this cloud agnostic data layer. You know, think of it as a fully managed real-time data fabric that's capable of handling, you know, multiple readers and multiple writers, distributes that data across clouds and cross parties so that you can, for example, ingest IoT information on Azure, process it on AWS, and then go store it and do analytics on it in Google without having to figure out all the complex networking and APIs and security build out that, you know, used to take a huge team of distributed systems engineers to accomplish. And that's really where we provide that leverage. We combine a distributed ledger technology with a serverless architecture to create this cloud-spanning data and application layer. And it takes this formerly very challenging problem for enterprises, and it turns it into this easy-to-adopt cloud service. So they can walk up to us with a simple data model, and then a few minutes later, we've given them a production API that can actually span different parties, different clouds, different regions, so that they can actually build those applications without having to worry about solving some of those difficult data fabric implementation challenges. You know, in a way that, you know, just like Databricks kind of recently announced Delta Lake lets you help share Parquet files for analytics, Vendia makes it really easy to share real-time fine-grained application data for mission-critical applications. And our customers have, you know, they have a very common set of requirements. They're looking to get solutions built quickly. They don't want to deal with babysitting, you know, yet another round of infrastructure. They need to produce and consume that data in real time. And then they want to use that data to interact with their existing cloud services. So they need to make sure that the integration, whether that's data streaming, pub/sub systems, existing database systems of records, can be integrated very, very simply and very, very easily. You know, and in conclusion, though, we love seeing the innovation in cloud service providers. And honestly, it's something that as a company, we've really benefited greatly from in our own architecture and our own implementation. And we want to make that same kind of innovation and diversity available to our customers by giving them the freedom to use the best that the public cloud has to offer without worrying about these challenges of data gravity, vendor lock-in, or expensive infrastructure cloning.
If you look at last year, because of this pandemic, a lot of companies, they rushed towards digital transformation, they rushed towards the cloud because they had to be on the cloud. Now in 2021, they're kind of settling down, the hangover period is kind of over, and that's when they're hitting these problems, or suddenly they end up, hey, why are we using 5 or 6 clouds and all those things, and the day-to challenges that they face. So, according to you, what have you seen in the market where these companies who rushed towards the cloud and suddenly they are waking up to this reality that, hey, what are the mess we are in right now?
Yeah, I think it is. I think hangover is probably, unfortunately, a pretty good word for that. And I think you see a couple of things happening there. You know, one of them, which we've already discussed here a little bit, is this idea of kind of multi-cloud in the bad sense as opposed to the good sense. So finding themselves in this rush to get things into the cloud with perhaps not a solid strategy around what does that look like? Are we on the right cloud? Are we using different clouds in effective ways for the right reasons? And are we really modulating that long-term investment and IT spend in a way that we're comfortable with? So I think that's kind of one, that's one bucket that's going to have to get sorted out in, late second half of 2021 and 2022, is people sort of look at what they brought there in the in their leap to the cloud. But I think the other piece of this, if you will, is this idea of multi-party applications. Because one of the challenges that COVID laid bare was just how fragile, even in an information and data sharing sense, some of our supply chain and logistics chains are. And the difficulty of figuring out where is a particular shipment at some point in time, and how do you construct a digital workflow on top of those pieces? How do you assess for damage, control shrinkage, enforce delivery SLAs, for example, when you've got maybe 1,000 different parties in the mix for all of that? And that's one of the things Vendia has been helping some of our customers work with as they look to not just exist in the cloud, but really figure out how do they make their data work for them so that it's not just about getting, maybe 10% lower bills on their storage or compute costs, but so they can really create these digital multi-party workflows that help them with, everything from shipment tracking to logistics to kind of global policy enforcement across financial settlement, track and trace, everything from sort of food to to toilet paper and back again. And that's been really gratifying to see the interest and the excitement from so many different sectors and industries, as I think there's this global awareness now of the challenges of those supply chains and how to begin to map those back into better IT solutions. So that part feels very promising. I think there's obviously a lot of work to do. CIOs have a long road to go there, but it's one that we're excited to help them with. And I think we've seen people already start making some really great progress.
Do you have some tips to CIOs that, hey, if you do want to embrace multi-cloud strategy, at least, you know, start. These are the starting points where you should look at.
Absolutely, because there's some real simple things that that companies can get going with. You know, one of the simplest I would say is, as they're thinking about data lakes and analytics, that's a very natural touch point to think about. You know, where do you want that data to sit? Where are the analyses, or sort of the BI, the AI, ML, et cetera, that you're going to run located, and start to work from that perspective of how to place a data lake, and whether, and some of that, and acknowledging some of that data lake may be your partner data, but how to do that, really effectively. I think that's one that is usually can be parceled out and kind of attacked a little bit in isolation, and then the other one that doesn't necessarily require companies to, you know, to sort of turn everything over in their IT stack simultaneously. Well, but as they're approaching new applications, especially stuff that's more event driven, it's a natural place to start re-asking the question of what's the right technology for this. You see that, for example, in whenever you've landed a file, then you're typically going to fire off some batch processing. It's a very natural place to kind of think about, is there a more intentional and thoughtful cloud strategy that we can bring to bear here, one that perhaps allows us to either choose a container-based approach or an event-driven approach. And that's one that we saw, you know, I've seen that in the past at AWS, certainly have done that myself at companies where I've been in the IT leadership position, and that's one that's usually very effective.
Tim, thank you so much for taking time out today and talk about multi-cloud, poly-cloud, and I would love to have you back on the show. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you again. Have a good day.